problem. I am not the problem. I have never left my country, nor have I ceded any part of it.
Let's talk. Triple A's flagship program that continues to elevate the diverse voices of First Nations people across the country. Centered around the unceded sovereignty of First Nations people in this country, honouring the history with a solutions-based focus on the future. With your host, Pomeroy journalist, Danny Tierce Johnson.
Yama, hello and welcome to Let's Talk. I'm your host, Danny Tierce Johnson, Pomeroy journalist from Moree in New South Wales. I'd like to start the show by acknowledging country. I acknowledge the traditional owners from the lands that we broadcast from, and I extend that greeting all across this beautiful black nation of ours today to wherever you're listening, your elders past and present, and particularly up to the Warramai Nation where my guest comes from today. The State of the Environment report was released yesterday, and it paints a damning picture, a detailed, brutal picture of destruction and loss, and almost none of it is new. After 10 years of Liberal government, here we are. Virtually everything in this five-yearly government report card, that another 202 animal and plant species have been identified as threatened with extinction or worst, that at least 19 ecosystems show signs of collapse, that hundreds of thousands of hectares of native forest have been bulldozed, that vast southern kelp forests have disappeared, was already known and publicly documented. We already knew that the Black Summer bushfires, exacerbated by climate change, may have killed or displaced 3 billion animals, and that marine heat waves on the Great Barrier Reef have caused 4 mass coral bleaching events in just 7 years. Oh, this is dire. We know the combined impact of the climate crisis is habitat clearing, invasive species pollution and mining is growing. It's all been out there for anyone interested, though, enough to pay attention to what's been going on in this land. Young New South Wales farmer and Warramai man, that's right, a farmer and a blackfella people, Josh Gilbert says the state of the environment is a lived experience of farmers. Josh, welcome to the show, brother.
Hey, brother, how are you?
Hey, I'm really good. Thanks for jumping on the show. We just had a quick chat online. You've agreed to jump on, so I just want to thank you for that, giving me your time real quick, brother. But I'm just fascinated. I've met a fellow who's a blackfella and a farmer. But before we go on, tell us a bit about yourself and who you are, Kaz.
Yeah, happy to, brother. And obviously, I want to start by acknowledging country, paying my respects to elders past and present right across the country, and thank them for all their wisdom and knowledge that continues to inform what we do, and also, you know, what I think is the State of Environment report calls out we need to keep doing, and that's listening to mob and acting on mob's vision, guidance, and knowledge to ensure that our environment's a better place. So just want to start by paying my respects to elders and acknowledging country. For me, I'm a Warramai man. I have a real interest in Western agriculture and our mob's role in that. I've spent a fair bit of time looking at bush foods and native foods, and have done that over the last few years. But really, when I was having these conversations with mob and looking out at what mob were doing, I was like, well, where's our voice in, Western agricultural systems as well? Yeah. Why don't we get to have a yarn about, cattle farming and sheep farming and cropping when we know that mob have been involved in that over time? So personal story here, on Warramai country, we were impacted by colonisation in the early 1820s, and that was all done on the basis of agriculture, agriculture being a colonising act and pushing up into this land and, you know, doing all kinds of horrendous stuff to mob. But where our mob worked in with changed our mindset and the way that we did things, we started working with white farmers and have been farming in a Western sense ever since then.
Yeah, it's Warramai country is so beautiful. It's, if I'm correct, brother, it's north of Newcastle down there, the mighty Warramai Dolphins, that country down there. But it's real farming and agricultural country, particularly cattle, which is close to the coast and the great pastoral lands for farming cattle and whatnot. And it's really interesting because you're the first fellow I've ever spoke to on this show that is a farmer and a black fella. Because we always never see him in the same context, do we? You never see him in the same boat. We think, historically farming's been very white and black fellas worked on the farms but never owned them. But we're flipping the narrative, aren't we, brother?
Yeah, certainly. And I think, even just our role in working on farms is important too, and thinking about what that process and, I think too often we romanticise that when we think about, the early white days here. Yep. I think too often we, particularly farmers say, you know, look how great we were, you know, bringing sheep and cattle out to this land and, you know, basically pushing black fellas off and you know, farming that. But the reality is very different. Like, we know mob were involved right back from those early days. You know, while we often did our own stations or, you know, farms, we were actively involved in that. We learnt and taught non-Indigenous people a lot of information around agricultural practices when they came here. And for me, I want to unpack that. I want mob out there if you know, really, I guess, recognising if mob want to farm, let's actually look at what that looks like. To date, we really have no idea how many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are out there farming, how many own stations and farms today. And probably the best bet to get data around that is to look at the ABC news website and do a few calculations. So for me, I'm keen to say we're in this space. We have been since, for a long period of time, we've been farming, you know, 60,000+ years, but we've also been farming for the last 200 years side by side with some of you white mob, and we need to get recognised for that too.
Yeah, there's a lady up North Queensland, Keena Marmon. She owns a cattle property up there and has done for a while. I had her on the show a few months ago talking about her book. But there is a big, rich history, and, you know, you made me think about the Gringy walk-off then. You know, we worked up there, and that was one of the first, you know, the big walk-offs around stolen wages, and that was all mob working on the big cattle station up there. So, you know, that history has been there since day dot. And like you said, brother, you know, our mob have been working on the farms, teaching non-Indigenous people how to farm, where the water is, you know, how to be sustainable, which is sort of goes against everything in this, the dire state of the environment report, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, brother. I mean, I think, you know, there's not a lot of literature in this space and yarns around this, but the yarns that do exist and the, you know, the written stuff that's out there really talks about our mob protecting country and staying on country, even though white folk are here doing all this terrible stuff. The mob stayed so they could stay connected to country, so that they could ensure that it was looked after and protected. And for me, that's what this report uncovers, that the last 200 years, unfortunately, you know, that relationship's broken down. We don't no longer have mob, you know, working side by side with farmers, and rightfully so, because they should have been paid and had proper working conditions. But you know, that has led now to this really tragic state of the environment that we now see.
What do you make of this as a black fellow and a farmer, Braz? Because I guess, you know, I've just been reading so many reports this morning, and I watched National Press Club yesterday with Tanya Plibersek, her keynote on the state of the environment report. And because particularly what really scared me is the destruction over the last 5 years and how rapid and how accelerated that has been.
Yeah, brother, I think for me, you know, there's this challenge in this space. And, you know, about 6-7 years ago, you know, I was the chair of Young Farmers in New South Wales. I stood down because I wasn't happy with the organisation's views on land clearing. And unfortunately, this is the kind of stuff that's come up, like, that farmers are, you know, really knocking down trees at a rate that shouldn't be seen. We know, you know, mob have this view and this protection and care of environment, and that voice just isn't listened to, it isn't respected. And for me, what this report shows is that clear divergence between strong Indigenous thought, leadership and decision-making, and, what you know, kind of where we've ended up with now.
But, you know, it's freaks me out still that farmers are still invested in land clearing. Give them the education out there and what we know about the land and how much we need trees and how much it keeps water in the ground and creeks flowing and whatnot. Is there a shift within the broader farming community around climate change and I guess looking after their environment, their patch of land? I mean, I've seen this with cotton farmers out the back of Moree because... And, you know, they do it for greed because they want to keep making money, but they because cotton sucks so much out of the soil and it takes so much water, they replant soya beans to put all the nitrogen back in the soil and sort of reinvest in the soil and try and clear it all out a bit. But I don't know if this is the case broadly across sort of the farming industry.
Yeah, I certainly think the ag industry has done a lot better in the last few years. I mean, it was only in 2004 14, 15 that farmers actually acknowledged climate change was impacting them and that they were playing a role in that. So we're not talking all that long ago. And for me, I think there has been a pretty consistent effort from agriculture to try and do better, but recognising there's still a lot to be done there. There's still a lot of connections that need to be made. And one of the things I think that keeps me up at night the most in this conversation is we know, even through Western laws and, you know, and I'm not saying this is perfect, but through Western legislation and land rights, we know that mob still have rights and interests in a Western sense, around 60% of Australia's landmass. And for me, that's pivotal because we know that agriculture says about the same statistics. So there's at least 10% of Indigenous land holdings and agriculture crossover in Australia. And that needs to grow because of the impacts of climate change. So what we actually need to do is create better relationships where non-Indigenous people are actually listening to mob, listening to what we're trying to tell them, listening to what our views and our learnings have been over the last 60,000 years, and actually work together around looking at what the future of agriculture is going to look like. That should obviously include a really big presence around bush foods, and mob should be leading that sector. Yep. But at the same time, we've got mob who are out there farming sheep and cattle and cropping, and we need to build that relationship into these yarns as well. So for me, this convergence is really important. We need to start having those yarns now, but really what's happened is you've got an agricultural sector that has treated mob really poorly for the last 200 years. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago that they're still doing some pretty horrendous acts. And now are really trying to grapple with, well, how do we create new relationships? How do we, you know, how do we work with mob? How do we recognise that we've stuffed up and that we need to start working better in this space?
Yeah, how do we do that? How do we get those, you know, how do we engage, or how do they engage with us, I should say, because like you said, there has been a strained and stressed relationship because their mob have been ripping us off for years. They've been ripping our land off for years, and particularly back in my day at the back of Moree, it wasn't a very good relationship with the cotton cockies. So how do we get those mob, you know, listening to our people and our knowledge, given the history? Because, you know, particularly I find like some farmers and blackfellas did come together over gas, because gas was destroying their land, and our cultural heritage helped protect their lands and stuff like that. So it's a big question, isn't it? How do we get all this coming together and the sharing of knowledge, and, you know, two people who have been pretty opposite sides of the Australian diaspora sort of talking now?
Yeah, I think the State of the Environment report and kind of all those conversations are leading up into this big yarn, I think, nationally, that we need to actually start addressing this. So, you know, I look at the State of the Environment report from an agricultural sector view and go, geez, we really need to lift our socks up and start getting into this better. And I think, you know, this report for the first time ever has a full chapter based on our experiences as mob and has had mob input into every chapter of it. So what I hope this report does is provide a platform for government and the ag sector to really go, geez, we need to do more work here. And the only way we're going to do that is by actually creating relationships with mob. The other thing that, you know, we've obviously got the Uluru Statement kind of in the works and referendum and all that stuff happening. And as that yarn continues to happen, I think agriculture will start to be pulled on this journey, whether they like it or not. And they're going to have to start building relationships with mob. So I think there's probably some good examples of that already happening, of people who have gone into the ag sector who are really, you know, good allies who are supporting mob and working with mob on that. And we need to, you know, showcase them as best effort and as best in the field and really promote their work while trying to get the rest of the agricultural sector to push on and really back that and, you know, look at similar models.
Yeah, because do you remember AgQuip back in the day? I don't know if they still have it now.
Yeah, Buzz, yeah.
But I just find something like AgQuip. So AgQuip was our biggest and, you know, world stage agricultural festival, I guess you could call it. And, you know, technologies on display, new farming methods, technologies, sustainabilities. And I just find that could be a really good intersection for farmers and blackfellas to meet up and yarn. and sort of moved forward, if you're going off this State of the Environment report card, because if people are still land clearing, because that's one of the worst, you know, for animals, for ecosystems, for the water, because the water is a huge problem, you know, across the Great Divide, and that's something that's going to really either break relationships or bring people together.
Yeah, definitely. And I think for me, the other kind of, I mean, it sits in parallel and all these things are interrelated, right? Like we know all these yarns, all the findings from those reports really showcase that all the interconnectedness of country and all these different things that are happening, I think is really telling around what that looks like. And I think we know that kind of as mob.
Yeah.
It's no surprise from us. But the statistic that I think worried me probably the most is that we now have more foreign plants here than what we do native species.
That's a different type of colonisation, isn't it?
Oh, you know what I mean? Terrible, bro. Like, we've got 6,500 different types of bush foods here, at least that. You know, it's a really pretty conservative effort. We know what we've been surviving from the land, from native foods and products, you know, for 60,000 years, and now we're into a space where that, you know, we can't even access that. There's more introduced species here than what there are native species. So to me, you know, that's really worrying when we have these conversations.
Yeah.
And obviously sitting down having yarns about this is important, but so too is mob, you know, being proactive in this as well and saying, well, you know, we're not going to have this. We need to start, you know, reinstating native foods. We need to start looking and bringing back native species and protecting what we have, because that's really important.
Yeah, because it's just not sustainable. Like, I know this State of the Environment report card, it's sort of, I don't know, just, yeah, it's more than dire, because, you know, it just goes to show how bad things are out there. And I guess for you as a blackfellow, Brian, someone who's, you know, in academia and in the agriculture industry, was this report card this surprising for you and your other mob out there that you work with, or was this take you by surprise a bit?
I think for me, it really is just the realities of what we've got, to
yep,
be honest.
Yep.
And I mean that in a really terrible way, that we kind of, you know, on our farm, you know, it's not a very big place up here on the North Coast. And, you know, we're based on the side of a river. We've had really bad drought where, you know, we've had to import feeding to get cattle through. We had really bad bushfires at the end of the drought, which are pretty terrible around our way.
Yep.
And then we've just had about 3 or 4 floods, just to rub it in, you know, the recent one just a few weeks ago. So there's this combination of stuff that we're all experiencing because of climate change. We know that that's happening on our farms. And I think for me, you know, and mob can see that in the landscape generally. Like, I think, you know, if you tuned in on country, you see all the impact of all this happening.
Yep.
And for me, this report just really cements it and puts it in stats for people in Sydney and you know, the other cities across Australia to say, actually, like, this is what it's like for mob and for other people back in rural and regional areas.
Yeah, because, you know, you say you've been going through, and this is, you know, I think about, you made me think about the cost of living when you're talking about, you know, what you've been going through with droughts, floods, fires, COVID, monkeypox. There was some cow disease going on as well. Like, all these things are sort of happening, and then, you know, as a result, when we go to Woolies or Coles or wherever we get our produce from, the prices are all, you know, way high, and a lot of families are struggling out there. And it makes me think about, if we invest in our Indigenous knowledges and we partner up, you know, the agricultural industry partners up with our mob, we can bring all those prices down for the whole of Australia. Do you think that's the case?
Well, I hope so, but I hope at the same time mob are respected for bringing that knowledge on the table.
Yes.
It might actually push prices up in some ways. But
yeah.
what I'm keen about is to have those key relationships, people working together around that and actually building that together, because I think when we bring the best of traditional Indigenous knowledge, combine that with, you know, some of the technology and understanding of landscapes, you know, because of colonisation and a range of other things, if we combine all that, that's when we're going to get the best outcomes for not only the people on the ground, but those who are eating our food and you know, relying upon it as well.
Yeah. And I mean, Josh, are you sort of looking to sort of what's happening on the other side of the world at the moment in terms of weather? because I've got a bit of a passion around sort of weather and the environments around us, and what we're seeing on the Northern Hemisphere at the moment is record heat waves in countries close to the Arctic Circle. You know, London was 40 degrees the other day. Yeah. There's bushfires, Portugal's melting down. Like, and this really scares me because, you know, we know from La Nina and El Nino, that's what's coming here next. And I just wonder if you guys were looking into that and forecasting is around, you know, what's coming in the next season.
Yeah, I you know, was just having this thought the other day, actually. You know, we've just cleaned up all of our fence lines because of the floods yet again, and replacement fences. And, you know, we've had this bulk amount of water again, which means that, you know, hopefully once we get a bit more sun and stuff, we're going to have a bulk amount of feed. But that's really good from an agricultural perspective, but it's also bad when you start thinking about the impact that that has on fires and, it won't take much, you know, for that ground matter to start growing again. You know, we'll start getting, or have had quite a bit of dry matter still build up around areas that haven't burnt for a long period of time because of the drought. Mm. I don't like predicting things, but I think for me, if this year isn't a bad fire year, then probably next year is going to be one as well. And hopefully, you know, we're able to kind of mitigate some of that by doing some proactive things, but also just acknowledging that if it's not this year or next year, it's going to happen sooner enough, and we need to start, you know, being ready for that.
Yeah, because I guess more than ever, you've got to plan ahead and I look to the environment, and climate change is real, and they're predicting more catastrophic events. And, you know, I don't know how you keep affording to fixing your fences and the constant maintenance of a farm from, you know, natural disasters, floods, fires. So I just take my hat off to you, brother. It must be so hard out there what yous are doing, you know, working every day on the land.
I think it's important it's around keeping on country and having that connection. You know, I kind of call this my soul work, that I'm hoping that what we're doing here on Warramai country means that 60,000 years down the track, we can have young mob farming here and engaging in this pristine landscape. And I mean that on this country, but I also mean it right across what we know as Australia now. I want all mobs to be, thriving. And for me, if I can do that and help facilitate that on our patch of ground, I know other mob are doing that right across Australia. And we need to keep building that, because for us, that future end goal is really important. That, once we get there, we need to keep planning for the next 60,000 years. And only by having these yarns, by connecting, by really kind of taking everything in and thinking about things deeply, will we actually be able to get there?
Yeah. Well, we're lucky we've got someone like you, brother, out there doing this work. And with that, I know you've got an extreme passion for agriculture and environment, the work that you do, and you're embarking on a PhD next year. I just wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the PhD and what you hope to accomplish out of that.
Yeah, absolutely, brother. So for me,
congratulations on the PhD, by the way. That's awesome.
Yeah, thanks, brother. Yeah, for me, it's about having this yarn, actually, to make sure that our mob's voices are involved in Western agriculture. We know that we're left out of the agri-political structures that exist to date already, and we need to really actually get involved in those. And I look at models, in the US and Canada particularly, around what that might look like. So I'm really keen to delve into some of that and to really just show that mob belong in this conversation as well. So there's less than 5 black fellas that graduate with a university degree every year right across Australia. There's heaps of opportunity there, and we need to somehow get more mob back on country involved in ag and also learning from mob on the ground.
Yeah, definitely, because, you know, for those of us that come, you know, from over the Great Divide, farming is, you know, our life, and, you know, we all work on properties and, it's who we are, you know, we work the land, and to be able to, I guess, do that in a cultural sense and get back to it and combining those Western knowledges with our culture, it's just going to be a wonderful thing, both sustainably but also economically for our families and our people, Abra.
Yeah, bros. Yeah, and I think for me, that's the big picture, and we all just need to see that, to live that, and to make sure that we do keep creating these inroads for the next generations, because for me, you know, that's when I'll die a happy man. I tell you that when, you know, there's young mob who are saying this is what I want to do, and look at us go and thrive in that industry.
Yep.
That for me is that, you know, gold standard. That will make me beyond happy.
No, well, congratulations, Braz, on, you know, the work that you're doing and work in the land. We really respect you and appreciate it for you for it. And thanks for just jumping on today and giving us your time at quick notice, because it's so important that we talk about the state of the environment, because the land is us, you know. It's the report card on the environment is a report card on our soul. So thanks for your time, brother.
No, my pleasure, Braz. Thanks for all the work that you do as well and getting mob's voice out there. It's really important. I really appreciate the opportunity to come on today.
Easy, my brother. Everyone out there, go and have a Google the State of the Environment report card, because you can actually find out some factors in your area and just how, you know, how dire it is out there, and maybe something we think collectively as mob to really sort of look at this and sort of see how we can really improve things that have been, you know, pretty bad for the last 10 years at least. Thanks again, Josh, and thanks to our audience. You've been listening to Let's Talk on Triple A Murray Country.